on 1116 SEN. The Right Time with Gavin Crosisca, Nick Hall and Mark Fine.
'26-22, by the way, Parramatta defeated Melbourne Storm, and we've got a very keen Melbourne Storm fan, Mikey in Bendigo, not happy with that final verdict and a couple of the decisions made by the video referee. We might revisit that story later on in the program. But the Right Time is all about the journey from addiction to recovery. It is all about demystifying something that now, since we've been doing the program into our third year, has become front page news, and that is the battle of addiction and the community cost. We do it every week with Gavin Crosisca, former Collingwood Premiership player. No, will always be a Collingwood Premiership player, but a former Pie now, though he was a much-loved footballer and had a legion of fans, his supporter base is, I reckon, grown because he works in a field that doesn't get maybe the adulation of a footballer, but is more important, and that is helping people out of the mire that is addiction. Sober Living House is a residential facility that he works with, 9578 1746, and Alcohol and Drug Help is the interventionist leg of his work. Good evening to you, Gavin.
Hello, Fonny.
No American accent?
No, 2 weeks wasn't long enough to get that, but I've certainly carried back the tiredness and jet lag from about a day on a plane, so good to be back.
Only got back yesterday, so yeah. We're very grateful that you come in tonight to tell us about that story. And also, I think you'd be pleased to come in because a guest that we had on last year is back. More on that shortly, but it's a good night to be here.
Yep, it'll be nice. Nice to sit back and have a listen.
He's done wonderful work holding the fort along with Jack Nagle. I speak of Mick Hall of Dayhab, but good evening to you, Mick.
Top of the evening to you, Finey. Good to have you back, Big Gav.
Thanks, mate. I can't say it's good to be back yet, but...
Well, mate, by geez, I tell you what, we've missed you.
No, thanks, mate.
But I tell you what, I've actually thoroughly enjoyed that seat, I have to say.
Okay, yeah.
I've become very accustomed to
that.
I
didn't even think. I've just sort of walked straight in here and grabbed it, didn't I? Sorry.
I know, it's just like old times. But it's good to have you back, mate.
Thanks, mate.
And we welcome Jack Nagle back. He was doing wonderful work with Mick while you were away, Gavin. How are you, Jackie boy?
I'm good. Thanks for having me back. I thought I had the night off, but roped in once again, but for a good cause this time, which is great.
It's always a good cause, isn't it, Jack?
Well, yeah, that's right. Always, always. It's nice to have a night on the couch as well, though.
Ah, okay. Good.
Rewind. Take us back 10 months and a pretty confronting night that you put together for us on this very program. What happened that night?
Yeah, look, it was a confronting night, I suppose, for myself and from some other people that I talked to that were listening into the show. But I had not only one of my recovery peers, but a very good friend of mine that I not only have spent some good times in recovery with, but that I also use with and known since I was about 16 or 17. And we actually had Jimmy in here in the studio under the influence of heroin and struggling to get clean again. And it occurred to me the other day when I was having some dinner with him that, you know, since that night that he hasn't used, and, you know, he's now 11 months clean and doing very well in his recovery. And I thought it'd be a great opportunity to have him back on the show and share some of that success with us.
So let's welcome Jimmy back to 1116 SEN. G'day, Jimmy.
How you going? Thanks for having me back.
Do you remember that? I'm sure you do. That night 11 months ago, you were here, you admitted in what was a stark admission that you had just used heroin, that you were sick of the life of using, attempting to get clean. It was a sort of I felt that on the night it was a trap that you were in and find bloody hard to get out of, which is symptomatic of many addicts, I guess.
Yeah, no, look, I vaguely remember it, to be honest. I actually had to go back onto the internet on your podcast and have a listen of that night. I actually did that today, and, listening back, it was quite confronting, actually, for me, sitting here today. And I actually thought the show was like a 15-minute show, and I listened to it back today and realised it's a lot longer, and it's nice to be sitting here clean.
What did you do to get clean, Jimmy? I remember that night very well, and I know that sort of you, I mean, you got grilled as well. I mean, we certainly didn't pull any punches, and you kind of, you know, laid the gauntlet down too. You didn't want to go back to rehab, I know that. You were determined no rehab, and you wanted to do this, you know. Well, not so, I don't know. Maybe it was Jimmy's way. I don't know. But what happened? Tell us what happened after you left the show.
Yeah. So I guess from my past experience, like, I've gotten clean with rehab, and through going to rehab, I learned where else I could go to get clean. And last time on the show, I conceded to the fact that I had a few days before I was going to start running a habit again. And
Do you think that was important, that bit that you just said that you conceded? Like, it's, it almost sounds like a bit of a surrender to the fact that
I knew.
Yeah,
I knew I had a day or two, and I was going to be in full flight.
Yeah.
Because then, obviously, my physical, you know, withdrawals would have started kicking in, as well as the mental. And,
yeah. And we both know that that's, once it gets to that, she's a struggle.
Yeah, so I knew I had a day or two, and I got myself to a meeting, and just ever since, like, consistently have tried to get to meetings, and like, I don't know, just keep it simple and do what I'm told. And
so that's the NA meetings?
Yeah, NA meetings, yeah.
And it's been how long?
A year, the 22nd of next month.
Far out.
It's an unreal. It's an enormous effort. So in the first stage, and Mick and Gavin, I'll talk to you about this. Jimmy's issue was the physical debilitation that would come in withdrawal.
Yep.
And Jimmy, you were also working and wanted to maintain your professional life.
Yeah, that's correct.
So at some point, history told us with Jimmy that he would succumb to the easy way out, which is, I can't stand the pain. It's these flu-like symptoms. They've ground me down to nothing. It's agony.
Hmm.
I just need to make a phone call, one hit, and I'm feeling sweet again. And that really is what, for many people, is that cycle that you spoke about, even though you don't remember it, pretty powerfully. 11 months ago was just, I can't bear going through it, and it's just a lot easier just to take the hit and keep the show going.
Yeah, and isn't it right, Jimmy, like especially heroin use, a lot of drug use, but in particular heroin use can be very, very much about medicating. It's about using again before the withdrawals kick in, because the withdrawals, now when we say like the flu-like symptoms, and that's what it is, what the withdrawals are, they're flu-like symptoms, but it's it's more severe than that. You know, it kind of sounds like, oh, you're weak, you know?
You're like, pussy.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's more than that, you know?
Yeah,
they're super-powered, you know? Like, if it was just a bit of flu, oh, yeah, got the sniffles and a bit, you know, like a bit achy or whatever, you know, we could get through that. And I guess, so one of the things that concerned me at the time with you, Jimmy, is that, because I know that you've been through this a few times, And why it was such a worry about you getting into those physical, like really starting a habit where your body was going to go into withdrawals, is because the disease of addiction is a progressive illness. So over time, it gets progressively worse, never better. And what that means is that once where we, and I was in the same spot, I'm sure you've been through it, you've probably been through times where we could fairly easily cold turkey off heroin, if need be, if push came to shove. But then the progression of this illness goes along, and there comes a time where you can no longer cold turkey. It is just way too hard. And that's the point that I thought that you were possibly at, you know, and that's why it was just such a concern to hopefully get you some help, or you get yourself some help before those withdrawals, you know, before that stage really happened, because that could have been... if you had it passed over into that stage, I mean, I don't know. What do you think? I mean, I don't know whether you could have got out.
Look, it's interesting insight, I reckon, just for you to be able to recognise that and say to yourself that I've got a day or two here before I won't come back is really interesting for me, because I wasn't a drug I used, and I hear about the withdrawals and the struggles that people have coming off heroin, and just talking about America, it's just... they don't talk about ice or meth over there. They're still talking about heroin. ripping through the place, and it's a really difficult thing for them to treat and to get people off, especially that those initial stages for exactly that reason, you know, the time it takes and the physical and mental withdrawal that it you know creates for you. So it's I find that really interesting, the insight you've had to say, okay, well, I've got a day or two here. If I don't stop now, well, you know, it could be the end again.
Jimmy, what so do you reckon that you could have, like, how hard would it have been, do you think, if those withdrawals really kicked in? Like, what do you think would have happened?
Me personally, from my experience, you know, like, I guess everyone uses their drugs differently and heroin has a different effect on every single person. But for me personally, as soon as I hit the point where I'm actually physically dependent on a habit, you know, there's no going back for me. It's either I keep using or I end up on methadone or I end up in rehab.
Yep.
Like, there's no...
Or jail.
Yeah, or even worse, you know, and... yeah, there's no cold turkey for me when I hit that stage, you know. I really struggle with it personally. Like, withdrawal hits me pretty bad because, like you were talking about before, the progression of the disease, every time I use, my using picks up where I left off. So it's not like I pick up, you know, and I'm back.
As a beginner.
Yeah, like a 17-year-old kid using heroin for the first time.
Well, that's an interesting point too, because see, the longer you keep using, or you know, if somebody keeps relapsing or whatever, your body gets older as well. So we physically get older, and it's just harder to come back. You know, it's just like, you know,
anything when you
it's
get
like
older.
Anything, yeah. It's just like footy. You get to a certain age, and you know, it's too hard to come back from the day before.
So we reach a point. You've got a bit of a handle on the physical nature of becoming clean. And as these blokes remind us and everybody that's rung in and part of the discussion, and there's many great expressions that Mick and Gav have for this, but once you get rid of the physical dependency, then it's time to address where your head's at. And that's part of the meeting. So when... And obviously it's an ongoing situation. From 11 months ago, why is the headspace now receptive to clean living? And what have you done in those 11 months that has made you understand or want the life that you've got now as compared to a clear and rational decision to use? There would have been many times where you were using when you hadn't used for a while, you've come out of rehab, so you're clean, and you've said, I love it, I want to get back on it. Why now are you saying, I don't love it, and I don't want to get back on it?
I guess for me, you know, like this time around, I've done things a little bit differently than I always have, and I guess that kind of entails, like, I've actually tried to do, like, a little bit of what's suggested in NA, and I've tried to do a little bit of work on myself, and... yeah, I guess today I kind of am starting to value the person I am and the person I can be. And, you know, like, I've never really had that before. And because, you know, my previous recoveries, I've never really put in much work on myself. It's kind of been a really, like, it was more as long as everyone else thought I was doing well, I was doing well. And I don't know, now I'm kind of just, you know, I try and stay low-key and I don't like to parade that I'm doing really well. And I personally value the direction I'm going, and that's kind of what's making the difference.
I hear a lot of humility in there, you know, like not wanting to parade and all that sort of stuff. And the good thing is that we know that when someone becomes humble, they become teachable, you know. And recovery is about learning a new way of life and how to live it, you know. And if you're not humble, it's impossible to learn, you know. And that's what I heard in you, Jimmy. And also, you know, I heard also that. See, a lot of people, you know, when they first kind of, you know, start tackling addiction, it's all about not using the drug and or the drink. And then there's the thought that, well, I'm in recovery because I'm not using the drug or the drink. When in actual fact, if we're going to talk about addiction, that's not really dealing with the addiction. That's really putting the symptom of the addiction down and placing you in a position to where it can be treated. And part of that treatment's going to the meetings. But like you said, you know, I'm glad that you did say it, is that you've tried to put in some work in the program, you know. And there might be listeners out there saying, you know, what sort of work is that, you know. And, well, there's all sorts of stuff. And, Gav, do you what do you do? What do you do in your recovery? What's the work that you do?
Well, we have a guide to basically show us how to live differently, and it's about you know, humility is a huge word that you said there, Mick, but it's about doing things for others, and you know, you look at the step work and it's, I can sort of cringe when I think about doing it, but that's, for me, that was where the work was. That was that real, yep. That gave me the real shift in me. And
could you explain what that means, the step work?
Taking inventory of self, is that where you're getting at?
Yeah, just all, I guess from the first four, you know, there's a whole range of things in the first four steps. The fourth is pretty important in terms of having a good look at the past and being able to not forget it and not just say that, okay, I'm here now and I'll just move forward. It's about dealing with the past and dealing with the stuff that I carry from the past. And then once we can get past that, well, then we can sort of start moving into the future and how we're going to behave in future terms. And the 10th step's about looking at my behaviours every day. And I still do that. I have do a little inventory most nights and just check in on how I've gone and how I've rated myself basically on the day. And I think that's the key part for us or people in recovery that do work a program is that we're continually, so I speak for myself, I'm continually trying to see how I can get better. And previously, I just didn't give a shit. It wasn't about that. It was just about me doing what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And I had no problem with any of the consequences that came my way. And, you know, now it's completely different. And I look at the behaviours and if I need to make amends or speak to someone about my behaviours, I'll go and do it as quickly as I can.
And as part of that, we need to take a break. And I'll run this through with Jimmy as well. I'll pose it to all four of you, Jack as well. Is part of those steps making a better self based on having more to stay clean for, that by following those steps and being a better person to yourself, being a better person to your family and friends and to the community, if you're more worthwhile and you have more self-worth, then it's a person worth keeping away from the addiction, because the addiction is self-destruction. So it's about not self-destructing, and the best way to not self-destruct is to up your personal value, both how you see yourself and maybe how you perceive other people seeing you. We'll take a break, and when we come back, I'll ask how high that self-worth is in our special guest tonight, Jimmy. What a night we are having on the right time, and you might have heard Jimmy make reference to going back and listening to a podcast of when he was on 11 months ago, which was the last time he used that very day. And you can also hear testimonials and past episodes of The Right Time at the website, therighttime.com.au. It's a resource. It's a perfect place for somebody who might have a loved one, a friend, family member, a teammate, a workmate who they're concerned about. Like this SMS, I won't read out the name, as the sender has people that listen to the program that may be able to relate, but a friend of his is, every time they go out for a catch up at the pub, off to the toilet four or five times, supposedly doing coke, and is that a problem? Well, I guess I'll throw it to the experts, Mick and Gavin, but just that you SMS through shows that you have some concerns, does it not?
Oh, look, I would think, if that was someone I knew and they were, and I was catching up with them four times a week and they were using coke four times a week, I'd think that's definitely an issue. Most certainly.
But if you have concerns about a friend relating to substances or gambling or drinking, then that's a good, first of all, it's great that you're a concerned friend.
Yep.
What do you do, Mick, if you have those concerns?
Yeah, well, I guess it's a hard one for him. I mean, sometimes you can talk to the person. If it's someone close to you, I'm sure you could share your concerns and without being, you know, judgmental and scathing or anything like that, but just sort of, you know, pointing out, you know, look, I'm just a bit worried. You know, I've seen you doing whatever you're doing. But, you know, when you say would we consider that as a problem? Well, I don't know. I don't know the person, and you know, I try not to be too judgmental about what people are doing. Some people might be able to go and do, you know, four bangs of coke, four racks of coke a week and be okay. I don't know.
He's using four times a week, isn't he? That's how I took it.
Four or five times whilst might be a night.
Anyway.
Whatever it is, there are concerns, and concerned friends need to monitor, need to keep an eye.
Exactly what Mick said, though. If you're concerned, have the conversation.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
for
right.
sure.
That's maybe you'll have your concerns allayed, fears allayed.
Yep.
Or maybe it'll really be appreciated by the person who
might. And you might not, but that's all you can do.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It is part of this program is an understanding that there are issues out there, and hopefully we have been able to put a spotlight on some of those issues, but individual cases are all different.
Mm.
And as a concerned friend, which you are, act like a concerned friend, and concerned friends don't keep secrets or talk behind mates' backs. They front them, and it's always been the best way to be up front, whether it's about cocaine use or gambling or maybe, you know, being inappropriate with somebody's girlfriend. Better to be up front with somebody and address a problem. You'll be amazed at how that's appreciated as keeping it to yourself and talking about it with your other mates, which is often the alternative and doesn't generally serve as good a purpose. Jimmy is in the studio. Jimmy, actually, we'll get on to something and I'll get Jack to frame the question. But before we went to the break, I was just asking you two blokes about through programs like the 12-step program, which are Narcotics Anonymous, Gamblers Anonymous, AA, there's a real real body of work to becoming a better person, both in how you perceive yourself and how you perceive other people perceive you.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that the case? Why is it so important to self-improve? Because most of us don't do it through our lives consciously, even though you try and better yourself, maybe at work, but we don't have a big body of work like addicts do in recovery.
Well, it's really important, Finey, because, you know, so some of the outstanding characteristics of any addiction is an incredibly low self-esteem, so a really, really low self-worth, self-hate, and normally accompanied with that a high ego, which means the ego meaning the front that's put out to the rest of the world, the self-esteem meaning the way that we feel about ourselves. And when you think about it, for a lot of us, I'm not saying for everyone, but for a lot of us, why wouldn't we feel shit? Why wouldn't we feel bad? We've ripped people off. We've done burglaries. We've done this. We've done that. We've continually promised and broken those promises. You know what? If we're a halfway decent person, we should feel crap. But what we want to do is get clean and sober and change that crap. You see, we can get a drunken horse thief. We can remove the alcohol from him and we've just got a sober horse thief. We don't want that. Well, if you do want that, all good luck to you. All right, but true recovery and people that truly turn their lives around, it's imperative that we, A, identify what we've been doing wrong, because sometimes we're in such a haze when we get clean and sober. And it can take, by the way, it can take up to 5 years to really get clarity and deep understanding of just exactly what damage we've done. All right? And then there is a lifelong errand in correcting that behaviour to make sure we don't keep repeating the same stuff over and over again, and also mend bridges where we can mend them and pay back whatever it is we need to pay back, which is why, you know, I certainly have the belief that, and I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I went to prison for my crimes. I deserved to go there, even though I was unwell, because I sit here today feeling that the hard time, what I consider hard time for me, that I did, I paid my price for what I did wrong. So I can sit better with me. I know that I haven't been, I haven't gotten away with anything. I've taken responsibility. And it's imperative that a person getting into recovery really takes responsibility for what they've done and also for how they act today.
Gavin, you can pay back financially. Not everybody can, but you can make efforts for restitution. You can pay back society through Mick's notions, and quite rightly, of paying a debt to society by being incarcerated. How do you pay yourself back? How do you how do you settle the legs with yourself, looking back at rot, you know, parts of your life that were now you see as being bad or rotten? How do you settle that ledger? Is that
hard? I don't know whether it's a I've legitimately settled it with myself, but it's more of having a complete 100% acceptance around who I am, what's happened, and where I'm going, and the way I continue to get through that is, and you talk about self-esteem only comes when you do esteemable acts. So if you're continually doing what Mick was saying, well, you're going to have really crappy self-esteem. But when you get through and start your recovery, and you start doing things that build that self-esteem up, it's just really gratifying. And even coming to the show here Monday nights when I can't be bothered, Mick,
but
and
that's exactly what we do for
others without even thinking about it.
And Salvo Hawks through Reckling.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. You know, we don't know the... Well, I certainly haven't... I don't realise the impact I have on the 20 people that come and play footy with us every second Wednesday. But when I hear back from other people and hear from them, it's an enormous impact.
The other thing too is that from low self-worth, right, which is usually comes from acts that we've already done, right, so past acts that we'd already done that we're not happy with, and with them comes along guilt, right? Addicts can't live with guilt, I'm telling you. So many addicts relapse on guilt.
Mm.
So that brings back into sharp focus, Jimmy, 11 months clean, but Jack, you can take up the discussion here because it's not the first time that Jimmy's been clean for an extended period, is it?
Yeah, that's right. And I guess off the back of what Mick and Gavin were talking about, you know, I really wanted to ask Jimmy, I guess I know the story personally, having been a close friend and things like that, but I've seen Jimmy have long periods and longer clean time than he is now. And after a long period of time when everything's going really well externally, still pick up drugs again and use. And I was just wondering, to give the listeners some insight into what Mick and Gav are actually talking about, what's your process, Jimmy, and what starts to happen when you get back on the road to picking drugs back up again?
Yeah, so... As Mick and Gav have just touched on, you know, like my previous clean times, I've never ever worked on my self-worth or my self-esteem. And even though I had those periods of abstinence, I never really did anything. And, you know, for that whole period of time, I genuinely did still feel like that I was a bad person and I didn't deserve good things and I didn't deserve to stay clean. And like I was talking about before, it was all that external front. And as long as my family thought I looked good and, you know, the girls thought I looked good and whatnot, that I was all right. And, so for me this time, you know, I've got this amazing man in my life who's my sponsor, and he's helped me work through, you know, what Gav touched on before, the steps and stuff. And I've started to get that little bit of self-worth. And by no stretch of the imagination am I completely comfortable in my skin. You know, it's a lot better. And you know, because when I'm not comfortable in my own skin, I revert back to things that, you know are going to make me, you know, be out of myself or instantly feel good so I can go and gamble obsessively. And, you know, I can just focus on gambling for a whole week and it'll take my mind off how bad I feel about myself. But then at the end of the week, when I've got no money, I sit there and go, well, you know, you're an idiot. And it's tenfold. And, you know, for me personally, it's gambling. It can be women. It can be looking good and, you know, getting obsessed with, you know, taking steroids. It can be all sorts of things. For me personally, I'm sure everyone else has their own things. And for me, it all comes down to, you know, like I just don't feel good about myself. So I look for things that I think are going to do it really quickly. And they're always to my detriment.
it's fascinating.
Not laughing at that, Jim. I'm just laughing at Fonny's face.
But it's fascinating. It's like, well... Are you now enriching your soul, given that it appears as though part of your dynamic was not only outward appearance in terms of you appear to be clean, but also literally outward appearance, you know, being, and he's a good-looking rooster, Jimmy, so, you know, being buff and whatever for the girls, etc. Are you now enriching your soul, a deeper self that you hadn't done before?
Yeah,
or where have you discovered your soul, maybe? that deeper self?
To some extent. Like, I'm still just scratching the surface, really.
And, early days.
Yeah, and like I said before, you know, I've got this sponsor in my life who freely gives me hours of his week on a weekly basis to sit with me and go through my stuff to help me be a better person. And in turn with that, I try and, you know, speak to my friends if they need something.
Could you see yourself one day, maybe that 5 years or at some point, being as important in somebody's life as your sponsor is in your life now?
Yeah, well, definitely. I think that's the whole process, because I'm sure, well, I know for a fact my sponsor at one point in time was in a place of where I was, if not worse, and I'm sure all the boys here have been in that place. And, you know, as he's gone on his journey, he's gotten to that place of being able to give back to help someone else, and I'm lucky enough to be that person. And just like there's, you know, thousands of other addicts that are sponsees and sponsors and that's what keeps the ball rolling, and that's what's so good about, you know, the program we're in.
I've said this before, and I don't know whether you guys realise it, Jack, Jimmy, Mick, Gavin, and everybody out there who's in recovery doing similar work at 12-step programs, at unsolicited chats with friends, but you may have in your time of addiction and your life as an addict, you may have plumbed some depths, but I don't think you realise what good works you do in your recovery. It's sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees, but it is seriously good work, and it impacts on people, and you're doing it tonight. We need to go to the break, but off the SMS. I just hit 12 months sobriety last month, but I didn't get to one of my regular meetings tonight due to other commitments. And then I'd turn the car on to drive home and hear exactly what I need to hear. Thank you for this radio program. A break, and when we come back, four pretty rough and tumble blokes that at a previous point in life you wouldn't have wanted to necessarily have had much to do with, sit here and have final words. And believe me, they are blokes you very much want as part of your life if you are addicted to substances, drugs, alcohol, gambling, or somebody you care about is in that situation. These four blokes are angels. Welcome back to The Right Time. We're going to take a quick call and then final thoughts, and with Jimmy in the studio, maybe a final message of continued sobriety and hope from Mick and Gavin, who are experts and have trod that line 14 years, Mick?
14 years, yep.
Gavin, into
just
four.
Four.
Brilliant. They're good numbers. Any number's good, isn't it?
Absolutely. One day's good.
You've nearly four.
Four next month.
Yeah, he's 20 years old, this kid.
24.
Oh, well.
It can be a young man's game or a young woman's game, unfortunately, so age is no preventer. It's no inhibitor, is it?
No.
Let's go to Brian in Elstonwick. Hello, Brian.
Oh, hi, guys. How are you going?
G'day, mate.
I just listen to you guys. I listen to Flanny all the time, and, you know, you go for your whole life. Like, I'm 40 now, and I played AFL at under-19 level and, you know, number one player in the state tennis. You know, you've got a lot of things going for you, but then things drop away, you know, and you lose a bit of that respect about yourself, and you start taking drugs and things like that. With me, it was more the depression side. And so I'd just drink, like constantly drink, because it was my upper. And I'm just listening to you guys tonight. I'm like blown away, you know, listening to I can't remember who said it, but you make your family look as though you're the one, and, you know, you look fine, but deep down you're just so bad. So I don't know who said that.
Jimmy.
So for me, I just sit back, and I've listened to this show for a long time, you know, and I'm massive into depression and alcohol abuse and stuff, and I'm more or less hurt. What you do is you hurt yourself, you know. And my last three best mates, two of them committed suicide through drugs. We've all been down the same road.
But Brian, I'll just cut in there for 1 second, mate. you know, like we're talking about depression here, and you're talking about drinking as well, and that's your upper. And I've got to enlighten you on something here, that alcohol is a massive depressant. So if you're depressed, and this is the confusion that can kind of happen when it comes to alcoholism and that sort of stuff. We think that, you know, we're kind of taking something to make us feel better, and I guess momentarily it does, but alcohol is a depressant, so it's compounding the problem, you know, and the way to tackle this is to firstly have a look at the drink problem, and secondly, well, probably at the same time, get some help in terms of the depression, which means go and see a professional.
Brian, we've come to the end of this hour. We'd love, and it's important, not only, I think, for our listeners, but also for yourself to have a discussion, because I think that's what you want to have, and we'll be back next Monday night at 9 o'clock and would value, and I think you'd value, picking up the phone and with more time at our fingertips, have a chat with you. So is that possible?
Thanks very much. Honestly, that's why I was really ringing to say thanks, because you guys open up a lot of eyes. You know, you've got every different type of person out there listening to this. You understand what difference you're making in people's lives, you know. And I run a successful business, but I'm still down the dumps, you know.
That's common.
People out there would, some find that surprising, but that's why listening to the show is worthwhile. Jimmy, a couple of final thoughts and words of encouragement from two men that are well placed to give it. First of all, Mick Hall.
I want to just offer my congratulations and also my encouragement to Jimmy and just say, mate, keep going, keep putting one foot in front of the other, but keep the eyes on the prize. You and I both know that this is an inside job, meaning that it's from the inside out first, you know, and as long as you come good internally, psychologically and emotionally, your life will open up and your world will be okay.
My little one for not only Jimmy but everyone out there, and it was for myself as well, was to put the work in. You know, there's, as you said, it's take the drink or drug away, no problem. We're just dry drunks. It just doesn't work, and it coincides with the inside job. If we do the work required, we've got a chance of being able to live a life that we never thought we could live. And I think that I'll throw that out to Brian as well. And he seems like he's struggling. There's all sorts of therapy and medications that can help depression. And if you can get rid of the grog, and, you know, there's a life out there for you, mate, where you can be really happy and get through it without having those uncomfortable feelings day to day, which are quite painful.
Jimmy, if you hadn't embraced modesty, which is clearly part of the you that is now sitting here, I wouldn't say this, but by God, I'm impressed. I'm impressed by the passage of time that for you has been, I imagine, part vigilance and part growing, and hopefully the next 11 months, the next year, because a year's coming up, the next year will be much more natural and a more simple process. And over the years, you become like a Mick Hall, who is, I'm sure, conscious of his illness, but he lives with it just as asthmatics live with asthma and diabetics live with diabetes. And Gavin is well and truly on that path too, and I'm sure you will be as well. I want to leave you with one SMS, and a big thank you to you, Jack, as well.
Good on, Jackie boy.
No worries. Thanks for having me again.
And it's great for you and your good works that in no small part you've rubbed off on somebody like Jimmy. Well, not somebody like Jimmy. Actually, Jimmy. But I'll leave you with this one. My brother has been dead for 15 years from a heroin overdose. Keep strong, Jimmy. Make everybody proud. And make yourself proud. Well done. Keep it up. And that's from somebody who feels the pain every day of a brother who couldn't reach where you were now. Well done, mate. Thank you, Linesman. Thank you, Ball Boys. Back next week for another Right Time. And don't forget, if your personal needs are immediate, then Lifeline on 13 11114. I haven't read that number out for a while.
That is correct.
Is it the correct number?
That's the correct number.
I hope it's correct.
It is.
Double three. I'm not going to leave here till I second confirmed. Gee, you wouldn't want to get it wrong, Finey. Get a few things wrong, but not that one, mate. So I'm just bringing it up now to... It was correct.
1-3, double 1-1-4.
1-3, double 1-1-4, 13-11-14. Lifeline, where qualified counsellors can deal with immediate issues. And if you want a really good source of reference, therighttime.com.au. Thank you, everybody.
Good on you, Finey.
Thanks, boys.
You have all won battles, but those battles continue.